I'm Victor Beatty. Ukraine has imposed martial law for 30 days, anticipating what President Petro Poroshenko told Parliament, an extremely serious threat of land invasion by Russia. He said martial law in areas close to the Russian border will go into effect at 9 a.m. local time Wednesday to bolster defenses after Russia Sunday fired on and seized three Ukrainian vessels, along with 24 sailors in the Sea of Azov, off the coast of Russian annexed Crimea. The West condemned Russia's action. Nikki Haley, U.S. UN ambassador, called it a pattern of Russian misbehavior.
Sunday's outrageous violation of sovereign Ukrainian territory is part of a pattern of Russian behavior that includes the purported annexation of Crimea and abuses against countless Ukrainians in Crimea, as well as stoking conflict that has taken the lives of more than 10,000 people in eastern Ukraine.
Russia's foreign ministry blamed Kyiv for the crisis, calling it a planned provocation aimed at ramping up sanctions against Moscow. Dmitry Polyansky, Russia's first deputy permanent representative to the UN, said Russian sovereignty was violated after the three ships illegally crossed its border and did not respond to calls to move normally through the Kerch Strait. The incident comes just days ahead of the G20 summit, expected to be attended by Presidents Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin of Russia. In the Somali capital Mogadishu, at least 15 people, including a cleric, were killed Monday in a suicide car bombing at a religious center. Witness Muhammad Ali said he heard the explosion in front of his shop and saw many people on the ground. The insurgency al-Shabaab claimed responsibility, insisting the cleric had insulted the Prophet Muhammad. A separate bombing Monday in the city left at least three others dead. This is VOA News. The British Parliament is scheduled to vote December 11 on Prime Minister Theresa May's plan for Britain's future relations with the European Union once it leaves the EU, known as Brexit, March 29th. Among those skeptical of the plan during debate Monday, Justine Greening, Ms. May's former education secretary.
How can the Prime Minister reassure the House that this debate we're about to have now on her deal is based on facts and evidence and not more false promises to the British people, which, when broken subsequently, will damage trust in our democracy even more?
The plan has serious opposition among members of Ms. May's ruling Conservative Party, as well as those in the opposition. The other 27 members of the EU quickly approved the deal on Sunday. UN envoy Martin Griffiths is in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, part of international efforts to get the warring sides in Yemen to the peace table. Those talks expected to be held next month in Sweden. Fighting for the vital port city of Hodeida has eased in recent days ahead of the planned talks. In Afghanistan, at least 22 policemen were killed in a Taliban ambush in western Farah province late Sunday. Four vehicles were destroyed, a cache of weapons seized. American automaker General Motors Monday announced it's cutting back production of several models of cars and slashing its North American workforce because of a declining market in gas-powered sedans. Mary Barra is the GM chairwoman and CEO.
Based on the consumer shift toward crossovers, SUVs, and trucks, market conditions require that five North American assembly and propulsion plants will be unallocated product by the end of 2019.
The announcement drew criticism from President Trump and Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, where one plant will be idle.
Our government will always stand with our auto workers and do everything we can to support them in these difficult times.
Some 15,000 jobs are being cut. Barra said the auto industry is rapidly changing and the decision is aimed at strengthening the company's core business. Britain's Prince Harry offered support to Zambia Monday in efforts to boost its dwindling elephant population. As president of the animal conservation charity African Parks, the Duke of Sussex offered to bring elephants from neighboring Botswana. U.S. prosecutors said they've charged Juan Antonio Hernandez, brother of Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez, of conspiracy to import cocaine into the U.S., weapons offenses, and making false statements. The former lawmaker arrested Friday in Miami appeared in court Monday. Long-distance swimmer French-American Ben LeCompte has been forced to abandon his quest to swim across the Pacific Ocean, and a boat shadowing him was damaged in a storm. 51-year-old completed more than 2,700 kilometers in his bid to become the first swimmer to traverse the world's largest ocean. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Togo's main opposition coalition says it will boycott the December 20th general elections.
We are going to use our constitutional right to demonstrate. And in fact, we've already called for demonstration on the 29th of November, the 1st December, the 3rd and the 4th December.
Bridget Ajamabo-Johnson is coordinator of Togo's 14-party opposition coalition. Nigeria's main opposition PDP wants a nationally televised debate between its candidate and President Muhammadu Buhari. Alleged victims of Zimbabwe's army operations in the 1980s say they want compensation. And there are renewed calls to lift travel restrictions on South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar.
Unless there is any other justification, he should be released because we consider this as a violation of Machar's personal and political rights.
That's SPLAIO Secretary General Tingo Peters speaking through an interpreter. And we'll speak with a Liberian immigrant who was elected this month to the city council of a U.S. city. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Togo's main opposition coalition says it will boycott the December 20th general elections. Bridget Ajamabo-Johnson, coordinator of the 14-party coalition, says the opposition does not want to give credence to what she calls a masquerade. She says President Fona Simbe has failed to broaden the Electoral Commission to include members of the opposition as laid out in the ECOWAS-mediated roadmap. Ajamabo Johnson says the opposition will return to holding demonstrations beginning this Thursday, November 29th, and Saturday, December 1st, to ensure that the elections are not held.
We will not take part in this election, first, because according to the roadmap that was given to us by ECOWAS, one of the principles of this roadmap is that we should conduct in a consensual manner the electoral process and the reform process. And we should have a National Electoral Commission, which should be composed of members of our coalition and representatives also of the government. But the government has managed so that we are not in this Electoral National Commission today. And it allows him to conduct on an unilateral basis the electoral process. So in this condition, we say we don't have any confidence in this election.
Bridget, I know that the Togolese government and the opposition have been involved with the Economic Community of West African States. Yes. The reforms that you are talking about in the Electoral Commission, are they part of the discussion with ECOWAS?
Yes, they are part of the discussion. In fact, when the head of state summit of ECOWAS met in Lomé on the 31st of July, they adopted a roadmap to solve the Togolese crisis. And this roadmap recognized that first, they should release all the people that are in prison. Second, together, prepare and organize together the election. And third, we should do together the constitutional and institutional reform. To date, none of these 3 points has been achieved.
Sometime back, Bridget, the opposition coalition suspended the protests that have been taking place. Now, you have been quoted as saying that the opposition will do everything so that the election will not take place. What are you going to do?
We are going to use our constitutional right to demonstrate. And in fact, we've already called for demonstration on the 29th of November, the 1st December, the 3rd and the 4th December. You know, we'll never, never let them organize election, which will not be transparent as they used to do it. Those elections are supposed to bring an end to the crisis. But the one that they want to organize on the 20th of December doesn't have this capacity.
Bridget, you are very kind to speak with us all the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bridget Ajamabo-Johnson is coordinator of Togo's main opposition coalition. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, has called for a nationally televised debate between its candidate, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, and incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari, ahead of the February 2019 presidential election. The PDP says the debate would focus mainly on national issues, including the economy and the ongoing security challenges. Local media reports say the ruling All Progressive Congress APC party has appointed Vice President Yemi Osinbajo to represent President Buhari in all national debates. Chudi Chukwuani is an economist and political analyst based in the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
The debate is very, very important because we are practicing the same type of democracy that they practice in America. So the people of Nigeria need to hear from the people that want to contend to the president of the country on its debate setting for them to challenge each other and be able to sell their programs and tell the Nigerian people this is what they want to do or what they cannot do. So Nigerian people will be more informed to take an informed position by the time they are entering the polling stations to cast their vote. That is also one of the ways where people hold the presidential candidate to account. And it also shows transparency, because transparency is not just by mere pronunciation. Transparency is by action. And one of the actions, if you claim you are a transparent person, you should be able to come out, stand up, take questions, and defend your policy and your programs, and stand by it.
Well, some are saying that the APC has made it clear that possibly the vice president will be available for the debate. Shouldn't that be enough, or should it necessarily have to be President Muhammadu Buhari in the debate?
If you look at the American model, we have the presidential candidates. They have debates, not once, twice, that cover the whole range of questions and issues. And then after that, the vice presidential candidates now have their debates. The vice president is not contesting to be the president of Nigeria. The person that is contesting to be the president of Nigeria is the one under the constitutional democracy that the buck stops on his table. He's the one that is responsible. He's not the vice president.
What do you make of the assertion that the PDP demand is full of political machinations to undermine the ruling APC because there are other presidential aspirants? Why must it only be that the PDP presidential candidate will debate the president and not other presidential aspirants who are also seeking the same job?
In Nigeria today, there are two major people contesting for the presidency of Nigeria, Buhari and Atiku. We have two major parties, PDP and APC. All the other people, some are being sponsored by whoever they want to be sponsored, they are of no consequence in the upcoming election. Some of these people that they are talking about have not even scored one vote, which means when they go to the polling booth to cast the vote, they will not even be able to vote for themselves. They will vote for either the PDP candidate or the APC candidate.
There are issues of security. The president has vowed to crush Boko Haram. He invited all security top brass to Aso Rock for discussion. He is also being accused of corrupt officials in his administration. Some are saying the president should come and address these issues. What is your take?
My take is that whoever that is saying that is somebody that does not really care about the security of the country, and the person that does not know what responsibility of being a president of a nation is.
Chudi Chukwuani is an economist and political analyst. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 27. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Kenya is hosting a three-day historic conference that has to do with environmental protection. The first ever Sustainable Blue Economy Conference enters day two today, Tuesday, in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. As Maureen Ojiambo reports, the conference has brought together more than 17,000 participants from at least 184 countries.
The three-day conference has high global support with over 20 world leaders in Nairobi for the event. A number of environment-friendly civil society organizations are also in attendance. Speaking during the opening of the conference in Nairobi, Kenya, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta said that Kenya is in full support for the sustainable blue economy. President Kenyatta said Kenya will lead in the adoption of policies, strategies and mechanism that will lead to growth of national economies and create more opportunities and jobs.
And I therefore invite all of you to work with me, with my government and the people of Kenya and with other governments on the continent of Africa to build these key areas that I have highlighted today. Some of the steps that some of you could consider, including availing financial resources, transfer of technology and innovations, as well as capacity building in all these key areas.
On the other hand, his Ugandan counterpart Yoweri Museveni insists on embracing industrialization in Africa as a way of protecting the water bodies. He says the countries should form a union of the navy that will be mandated to curb pirates in Africa.
Now there's also this other problem of democracy. When you need votes of the forest encroachers and you need votes of the encroachers on the wetlands. So that's one problem. Industrialization is very crucial for Africa so that people get out of agriculture and go to industry and services and ICT.
A senior fellow and special envoy for World Resource Institute Conflict and Natural Resources and Sustainable Ocean Initiatives, Justin Mundy, said that the world must switch its focus on ensuring that ocean conservation is one of the top agenda for the blue economy's growth.
The challenge before us, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, is to build a process that concentrates on ocean regeneration. We have abused it and overutilized the ocean for far too long. We now need to regenerate it and restore it. And for that, we need regenerative finance. We also need to find a way of ensuring that the EEZs around our shores are managed properly.
At least 11 heads of state were present at the conference, among them Filipe Nyusi of Mozambique, Abdullahi Mohamed of Somalia, Ali Mohamed Shein of Zanzibar, and Danny Fore of Seychelles. They said that they are committed to the preservation and protection of marine resources, noting that if well harnessed, they will significantly improve the global economy. The conference is taking place across three continents. Kenya is hosting it with Canada and Japan as co-hosts. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ujembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
In Zimbabwe, there are calls for the government to offer compensation and an apology for the mass killings in the 1980s of thousands of people from the Undebele minority ethnic group. Columbus Mavunga reports from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe's second largest city.
In the Matabeleland region, more than 20,000 people from the Ndebele ethnic group were killed by North Korean-trained soldiers in the government-sanctioned Gukurahundu operation in the mid-1980s, according to human rights groups. 70-year-old widow Opasko Sana from the Gacheni Matopo area, about 600 kilometers southwest of Harare, says her husband was abducted in 1985 for being the local leader of the opposition party. She recalls seven armed soldiers coming to her home. She says they asked to discuss a few things with her husband outside, and after a while, she followed them to check what was happening. She says one soldier told her to go back into the house, then followed her and raped her. She then ran away to Bulawayo. She says the government that committed those crimes must compensate the people to show that it accepts responsibility for what happened. She adds that the people who fought and suffered for the country did not deserve to be killed by the same government they had put into power. She says the government must prepare a comprehensive compensation. Skosana says current President Emmerson Mnangagwa was the security minister under then Prime Minister Robert Mugabe, so the blame goes equally to them. Zimbabwe's Human Rights Commission chairperson Elasto Mugwadi says the Gukurahundi atrocities were indeed human rights violations.
We are aware and they would qualify what happened then as having been, you know, a gross violation of human rights, because it entailed the loss of lives, loss of property, and all that in terms of, you know, our Bill of Rights are sacrosanct issues. No one has the right to take, you know, away someone's life except God.
Netu Musanu from the government appointed National Peace and Reconciliation Commission says the group is working on bringing closure to the issue.
The commission will be guided by the interests and concerns of victims. I can't preempt and say we are going to give compensation, because this, we have not engaged with victims.
Like his predecessor, Mnangagwa has refused to apologize, but said he will accept the recommendations of the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission, which says it will soon be conducting public hearings on the atrocities. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
South Sudan's rebel SPLM-IO is calling on the regional group Intergovernmental Authority on Development to allow the Riek Machar to move freely so that he can participate in implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. A senior SPLM-IO official says Machar is under what he calls house arrest in Khartoum. But as Michael Atit reports from Khartoum, there is no evidence that the Sudan government is restricting Machar's movements.
After fleeing in South Sudan, rebel leader Riek Machar was sent in exile in South Africa for nearly 2 years before he was called to participate in a series of face-to-face meetings with President Salva Kiir, which led to the signing of the revitalized peace agreement in September this year. He is based in Khartoum at the moment. SPLM-IO Secretary General Tingo Peter says Machar's movement is still restricted. He says the leadership of the armed opposition group believes that it is time for regional bloc IGAD to allow Machar travel as he pleases so he can go to South Sudan and the surrounding region and preach peace. Speaking in Arabic, Tingo told South Sudan in Focus that the parties have started implementing the peace deal. There is no justification for restricting Machar's movement.
The peace agreement requires reconciliation, forgiveness, and release of prisoners. If he was put in prison as one of the political prisoners, so why don't they release him? Unless there is any other justification, he should be released, because we consider this as a violation of Machar's personal and political rights.
Tingo says Machar must be able to go to the grassroots level and talk to the people as part of the confidence-building process, but says he cannot do this if IGAD leaders restrict his movement. He says the implementation of the peace agreement requires funds so that the various committees carry out their duties. He notes that the money that has so far been provided to the National Pre-Transitional Committee is not sufficient to run all the committee tasked with implementing the deal. Tingo insists Machar's movements must be unrestricted.
His presence among people definitely gives hope, stability, and indicates that the real peace has come. But if he is still remain in detention, it gives a bad image on the agreement itself.
Tingo says the SPLA-IO commander held a series of meetings with government forces recently in Yei, Wau, Upper Nile, something he says proves his group is committed to building the trust and confidence required for the former warring parties to work together. A September 12 communique issued at the end of the 33rd Extraordinary Summit of IGAD Head of States and Government says until his final status is determined at the upcoming Ordinary Summit of IGAD Assembly, Riek Machar shall be allowed to stay in a country of his choice in the region. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
African immigrants continue to make headway in U.S. politics despite an increasingly hostile anti-immigrant environment. For example, during the November midterm elections, a Liberian immigrant, Winfred Russell, was elected to the City Council of Brooklyn Park, the sixth largest city in the U.S. state of Minnesota. Last year, a former Liberian refugee, Wilmot Collins, was elected mayor of the U.S. city of Helena in the western state of Montana. Also this month, former Somali refugee, 36-year-old Ilhan Omar made history when she was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. I met Winfrey Russell recently in Washington, D.C., and asked him just what factors contributed to his victory.
What we did was that we were able to build a broad coalition of multi-ethnic, multi-generational, multi-racial group folks who came together and decided that this was time to have representation in the city of Brooklyn Park. Brooklyn Park is about 84,000 people, and the Liberian immigrants make up 12 to 15% of the population, but we have not had representation. So we were able to build a grassroots coalition of a number of other groups of folks. People of color represent 56% of the population, but we have no representation. So we were able to do it this time by building this broad coalition of folks.
So what are some of the issues facing, say, Liberian immigrants? So let's talk about not just Liberian immigrants, but immigrants in general.
Some of the issues that we are facing, of course, we all know immigration is a big, big issue. Liberians in particular are now slated to be sent back because DED was canceled, slated to be sent back in March if nothing happens, as far as a clean immigration bill is passed by Congress, or we sort of create a pathway to citizenship for those Liberians and other African immigrants too who have immigration issues. We have a problem with affordable housing in the northwest suburbs of Minneapolis, which Brooklyn Park is a part of. And as you probably know, according to the federal guidelines, if you're spending more than 30% of your income on housing, then it's not affordable. So we need to address the out-of-control rent in Brooklyn Park, where you have a lot of minorities and people of color. We also have issues with small businesses. We gave Target and other big corporations that are located in Brooklyn Park tax breaks and tax abatement, but we don't have enough resources to support our small businesses. And as you know, small businesses grow the economy. They hire folks. So part of what I'll be fighting for, part of the issues that I fought for and tried to push when I get on the city council, is to ensure that we provide the services, we provide some incentives to grow our small businesses.
So you mentioned the DED, and that's the temporary protected status transfer into DED.
Yep.
Where are we? Are you making progress? Are Liberians making progress along those lines?
Well, we are making progress. It's a long fight. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. And so the progress we've made, we've now had some allies who have been elected to Congress, like Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, also from Minnesota, from Somalia, in the 5th District. We also have Congressman Dean Phillips in the 3rd District. So what we're trying to do is to reach out to these Congress people in the new Congress that are now taking shape to see how best we can pass a clean immigration bill, or we can sort of create a pathway to citizenship for Liberians who are on DED and other immigrants who have immigration problems and immigration challenges.
Winfred Russell is a Liberian immigrant who was just elected to the City Council of the city of Brooklyn Park in Minnesota. He spoke with me during a recent event in Washington, D.C. And that's it for this Tuesday, November 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a productive day.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thank you.